Hi, I'm Brian.
And I'm Michaela. And this is Drink the Movies,
a podcast where each week we try to recreate a classic movie drink and discuss the movie that inspired it.
Thanks for joining us. Now let's drink the movies.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, hello, and welcome to episode 113 of Drink the Movies. I'm Brian here, as always, with Michaela. Now, Michaela, we are recording early because you and I, right now, if you're listening to this the day that it came out, we are at Walt Disney's Hollywood Studios. I'm probably standing in front of the Millennium Falcon, just in awe of the spectacle and the beauty of it. But how are you doing? How have you enjoyed our hypothetical week of Disney adventures we've had so far?
I want to say, just looking into the future, my feet are probably pretty tired. I'm going to have clocked thousands and thousands of steps. I'm going to have some highs and some lows on some ride. I'm going to really try and not be the parent that ends up screaming at their kid at 3 in the afternoon because I'm tired and they're tired and it's nap time for both of us. And we decided to skip that because we're at Disney and it's the happiest place on earth. So I'm really going to try and have a Zen Disney experience. So that's what I'm going to say. I don't know how many movies we're going to have watched that week because we'll be so tired.
We'll be very tired. Now, we did schedule a day off right in the middle, which just happens to be on Oscar nomination Oscar finalist announcement for the categories on our day off, so we will be able to watch those and check in on those, so that'll be fun. We can start getting our list together and see what we need to get watching as soon as we get back. But very excited about the trip and very excited about talking about this week's movies. It's one of the all-time great movies, maybe the greatest of all of the war films ever made, and that is Saving Private Ryan. So why don't we do this, Michaela? Let's take a quick break. We'll go whip up a cocktail to honor this film, and we'll be right back to tell everyone how to make one.
So this week, we're going into northern France to pay our respects to the men and women who stood against tyranny in the Second World War, and raising a glass of a nifty little riff on the gin and tonic by highlighting the flavors of the region in our Normandy flower.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. It's a lovely little cocktail. It is a lovely name, Normandy flower. And if you ever have the opportunity to make your way to Normandy, to the American Cemetery and to the landing beaches there, it's a beautiful area and they have some beautiful flavors. Michaela, you and I have both been fortunate enough to visit the American Cemetery there in Normandy and pay our respects and, just kind of absorb it. It's a very somber and beautiful place, very, very kind of haunting still to this day, as a lot of it remains unchanged. And, just the amount of respect to, we're here, in the United States, but, also to England and to Canada and, all the countries around the world who also landed on the beach that day. It's a beautiful and haunting place. So if you ever have the opportunity to go, I think you definitely should. And you'll definitely run across some of these flavors that we have today. So let's get into this cocktail a little bit. So this recipe, there's the Normandy flower you can find on a bunch of different cocktail websites and things, but the one we found, which actually had some amounts, came from bespokeunit.com. And it's pretty simple. You're going to build it just, in a tall, like Collins glass or in a short rocks glass, just however you would normally do your gin and tonic. But this one's pretty simple to put together. So why don't you run through the ingredients for everyone, Michaela?
Sure. It's going to be 2 ounces of Calvados. And if you're like me and never remember what that is, it's just apple brandy. So you can find that at almost any liquor store. Half an ounce of elderflower liqueur. Saint Germain is a really famous one, but it doesn't have to be that. And then 1/4 ounce of lemon juice. Yes, use real lemon juice because this is going to be a very delicate kind of addition to the cocktail. And you're going to put it in, like you said, a tall Collins glass, put some ice in it, top with tonic, And then make an orange peel to make it real pretty. And
Yeah,
then you're going to
absolutely.
toast to the brave men who gave the ultimate sacrifice on that beach, and enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Calvados, as you mentioned, Michaela, is apple brandy. Calvados specifically comes from the Normandy region of France. They're in northern France. So, if you ever do have occasion to go there, you'll find Calvados. You'll find apple cider, hard apple cider. That is a big part of the cuisine up there, and it is absolutely delicious. It's very dry and umptuous. If you can't find Calvados, kind of any apple brandy will do. They make it all over the world. We make apple brandy here in the United States. I think we actually used an apple brandy that was made here in North Carolina, local to us, and elderflower liqueur, also hailing from France. The one that we used, which I'm drawing a blank on the name of, you had a fancy one and a very pretty bottle. That comes from southern France. So yeah, it's very much a nice homage to this region of France in sort of this little tonic drink. And yeah, it's very beautiful. We actually used a little ice ball sphere that you had a flower in. If you look at the picture on the website, it's very lovely. It's very beautiful. And that's always a good time and a good thing to do. And certainly set off the name there, the Normandy flower, with the way that it looks. But you'd mentioned that it's delicate. What did you think about this one, Michaela? So like an elderflower gin and tonic is like your favorite drink, right? Like that's an old standby. We do the lobby bar where we feature a different drink, all the time you can make midweek. But Michaela mostly just makes elderflower gin and tonics, to be
That's
honest.
true.
So
That's very true. I really enjoyed this. I thought it was a nice change. I don't know why we don't, or I don't, do more things with like an apple brandy in it. We talked last week about using cognac, and that's used to scare me because I thought it was, kind of this old man kind of liqueur, or beverage. Same with apple brandy. It sounds like something like your grandmother would love, or something. But this was delicious. It was very tasty, and you could change the tonic out if you wanted to do elderflower tonic. You could, but you certainly don't have to. There's a lot of other ones out there. It just depends on what you want, what flavor on top you would like to add. I thought this was really lovely. And I did really enjoy the exercise of taking small flowers and putting them in ice, and going ahead and freezing them, because you get this really beautiful kind of block of ice with a flower in it that unfolds over the course of your drink, which is really nice. It didn't change the flavor, but it looked really cool. So yeah, I thought this was lovely.
Yeah, and certainly if you wanted to do kind of that same routine with things like herbs or something like that, you could do that to add a distinct kind of layer to that as the ice melts and the herbs came out to change kind of the aromatic complexity of your drink. You could certainly do that, and most importantly, it looks pretty in your glass. So yeah, this was a delicious little twist on it, and every once in a while we do a cocktail here on the show that requires some Calvados or apple brandy. We've done a few of those now. So it's nice to have another, a simpler but delicious idea, something to do with that. So now that we have these made, Michaela, let's finish these. We'll mix up one more, and then we'll be back to chat about, just one of the greatest tellings of World War II story and Saving Private Ryan. So let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Spoiler warning for Saving Private Ryan. If you've not yet seen this film, we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about all the things. And I have to tell you that this was the first film that was spoiled for me as a person growing up, and nothing made me angrier. So I'm going to give you all the chance that I never had. And you can press pause. You can go make yourself a Normandy flower. You can carve out 3 hours of your day. And you can watch it, and then you can come back and we can chat about it, because we're going to talk about it, all of it. And you're going to be really upset with the end if you're listening. I just promise you will. So yes, you've been
That's right. Yeah.
warned.
Yeah, this one does have for being a war story, it does have actually a pretty good twist to it, and definitely kind of pulls this little red herring at the start. So yeah, so definitely if you haven't seen it, and you're of age to you know, see something of this content, you should definitely should. It's definitely worth your time to watch. So with that in mind, Michaela, this was released in 1998. It was directed by Steven Spielberg, and it stars Tom Hanks as Captain Miller and Matt Damon as Private James Ryan. Plus, there are about, I don't know, like 100 other just brilliant actors and actresses that are in this thing to bring the story together. And we're going to talk kind of a little bit about them and the company that is accompanying Captain Miller as we go through the story here. So, yeah, so this was a pretty big deal when it came out. Michaela, this was nominated for 11 Academy Awards, but we'll get into that.
Yes, it was.
A little bit later. We're going to go straight into the movie this time, and we'll check back in on how it did on those 11 Academy Award nominations. So we get into this movie, Michaela. We see an old gentleman strolling there through the American cemetery at Normandy. It's very iconic. You can see all of the white crosses and Stars of David just lined up in these perfect rows from start to front. He's kind of walking there. You can see like his wife and presumably his kids and maybe grandkids kind of tagging along behind him. He is walking until he finally stops in front of a tombstone, sees the name, and kind of closes in on these very, very blue eyes. And then the scene changes to another set of very, very blue eyes standing on a landing craft that is making its way from the coast of England to the coast of France, which took about 24 hours. So I can't even imagine that, and can't even imagine the horrors that unfold when that door drops down.
Yeah, so for anybody who doesn't know history at all, this is a pretty good way to learn it, I suppose. We were in it was in 1944. There's actually... it's June 6th, actually. It's a very important day. And this was a this was what they called D-Day. And so there were, I don't know, hundreds of destroyer boats that fit, you know, 350 people in like a 2x2 box. I mean, there were tons of kids, young kids that were serving, that were kind of thrown in off of these boats. They would open up and you would just run out, and the enemy, which was, I guess, on the beach with their guns, would be kind of mowing these poor people down with machine guns and all sorts of bombs and different guns and firepower all over the beach. And so we see Tom Hanks's character. He's in one of these boats. As you say, his name is Captain Miller, and it's his group. You don't know how many there are. There's so many of them in this boat. And then they say, okay, here's the plan. They're kind of shouting it over these waves. I love the cinematography of this portion. I mean, in the first 20 minutes are really iconic, but this part I love a lot because the camera moves with the ocean. So you feel a little seasick. And I think that was definitely by design, because, of course, when they open the doors and the soldiers start running off, they're immediately getting cut down by all of these bullets that are kind of racing through. So then they get this idea to go over the side. That's really hard to do because they're in 10 or 20 feet of water, and they've got a lot of heavy equipment on. And so you're seeing like it, very in your face, like this reality, harsh reality of war. And I mean, that's just the first like minute into this scene. And it just gets so much worse after that.
Yeah, as it kind of makes its way through the beach, and we're not going to get into all kind of the gritty details of this, but yeah, we're seeing kind of this beach storming, you know, in ways that war films had never done before. It was very kind of epic and grisly in scope. It was utilizing kind of a lot of new techniques that you see now, were kind of pioneered here in the way that they were playing with the sound design as explosions were going off, and ways it was, you know, kind of slowing down time a bit and speeding things up. And you know, you feel just as kind of disoriented and scared and you know, all of those emotions that all of those young men were feeling, you're feeling that here. And you mentioned kind of the cinematography for this, and you know, looking back on it, I think that was one of the really kind of brilliant things that Steven Spielberg did here in this section. And if you're listening to this now, you've seen the movie and you know how kind of impactful this first 28 minutes of this movie are. But now I think if you were doing that and, you know, something in, you know, a war film that you're doing today, you'd use a lot of CGI to really kind of blow up the scope of this. And you'd see, you know, kind of further down the beach. And certainly this did that to an extent, but it felt very big in scale, but very small kind of in scope as you're really kind of honed in on this group of people coming off of this boat. And it just makes it kind of all that much more impactful as, you know, they're trying to figure out how to go, right? You are taking every inch and losing lives along the way. But good news is for, you know, Captain Miller and kind of his team there, most of them are able to kind of push up the beach and get into the German bunkers and strongholds and get those taken out and secure kind of their section of the beach. So we make our way through sort of this D-Day landing section, and we're kind of going to be transported into a little office. You see a bunch of women there sitting at typewriters, and they're writing up the telegraphs that are going back home to the mothers and fathers and wives of people who did not fare so well on that day and any of the days of World War II. And one of the women there notices something as she's typing up a letter.
Yeah, and I don't know, I mean, if this is how this would have happened, but you see this, again, the cinematography here is really impeccable. It's so cleanly done because she gets up, you can see her in the scope of, there's probably five or six ladies in kind of a line of desks, and you see her walk to another desk, pick up another letter, and then she walks to another desk and picks up another letter, and it's all in one movement. And then you see her take these letters over to this kind of office with like an officer in it who's looking at it, and then they walk together over to the general's office, and they're talking about how these three letters are representative of these three boys that are the Ryan brothers, and all four of the Ryan brothers are enlisted, and they were all fighting in different areas of the world, and three of them have passed in like the last week and a half. And so it looks like their mother or their family is going to be getting telegrams of their death at about the same time. Now, watching this now, this was a very tough moment to take in as a parent, because I can't even imagine losing one, but losing like three human beings that you created. It's very, it's just completely, I don't really have words for it. And the way in which this part of the film was filmed and the scope where you have the mother doing dishes and she's in this, I think they're from Iowa, and it's a very grand, kind of vast space where the farm is, and there's not a lot of action. There's one road, there's one car coming down the road, and you can tell she notices that it's definitely a military car that's coming down, and that can never be good news when all four of your sons are away at war. And so the scene where she's going to get these telegrams, and she kind of stands and tries to stay upright, and she can't really, because she knows that they're going to be delivering bad news, and she doesn't yet know that it's bad news times three. It's really just very heart-wrenching to watch, especially after you've just watched 30 minutes of what those boys probably went through, whether it was on D-Day or something very similar to that. Just really, really strong, very strong and very hard.
Very difficult to watch. As you said, you see that car pulling in, and as a mother or parent or a spouse, you know exactly what that car is there to do, to get the news of three of your children there on the same day. And you see kind of someone from the War Department, I guess, whoever is delivering the telegram, and a priest coming out of the car, and you know, she just kind of collapses to the ground. So very, very hard stuff. But we get tasked with the mission, right? The The colonel says, if that boy is still alive, then we're going to get him the hell out of there. And that is what's going to happen. So Captain Miller, who's an Army Ranger, has his platoon there, and they get tasked with going to find Private Ryan. Their job is to find Private Ryan. In the middle of this, I believe Captain Miller says it's like finding a needle in a stack of needles, because World War II is very, very vast in scope. It's not like you could just track someone down or pick up a phone and call someone. So, I mean, you're literally going to be walking through the countryside and trying to get tipped off on where this Private Ryan is, who was a member of the Airborne, but they don't always land where they're supposed to land, and they don't always get to wherever they're supposed to get. So this is going to be hard to do, but he's got a plucky little crew going along with him, I will say. So we've got Sergeant Horvath, who's played by Tom Sizemore, Private Ryben, who's played by Edward Burns, Private Jackson, who's played by Barry Pepper, Private Mellish, played by Adam Goldberg, Private Caparzo, who's played by Vin Diesel, and then we have the medic, Wade, played by Giovanni Ribisi, and Corporal Upham, who is kind of a translator kid, played by Jeremy Davies. So this crew is on their way. Yeah, and where do you start, Michaela? You have to go find this boy from Iowa, in the middle of France. You have no idea where he is. What do you do? You start walking and hope you get lucky. You take a tip and move on to the next.
Yeah, so they get the intelligence, and again, the surprise, the government is not perfect because it's made of humans, and so they were told that, hey, in a perfect world, his company would have been landed in a city of Nivelle. So they start walking to it. They find a kind of this other grouping of soldiers in a city that has been completely bombed. There are like walls that are falling over, and there's tons of bricks and debris everywhere. And in fact, there's a scene where we see Paul Giamatti as another captain who is there, and he's like, I don't have any idea who you're talking about. They're probably not still alive, but I've never heard of this kid. And they kind of, he's like leaning on something that falls into a wall, and then the wall collapses, and it shows like six or seven of the enemy like on the other side of this wall. And then they're like, what do we do? I don't know. Do we shoot? Do we not shoot? There's a really tough scene where they kind of happen upon this French family that's still trying to live in this rubble with a bunch of kids. And of course the parents, the dad is like trying to pass off one of the children probably with, you know, to get him to safety. And of course, Captain Miller is like, we are not taking this kid. We are not taking children. And then of course, you know, one of the privates played by Vin Diesel is like, come on, we should do what we can. And he's like, no, absolutely not. And of course, then there's a sniper, and the sniper takes Private Caparzo down, and it's really awful. And you know that this is foreshadowing. This is not going to be an easy, it wasn't ever going to be easy, but we're going to probably watch a lot of people lose their lives.
It's very difficult. Like you said, they're kind of going from town to town, talking to people, and they get to, yeah, this bombed out section here of this French town, ask them to take the kids there. And Private Caparzo does, and ends up losing his life, which, you know, is obviously bad. And that really is starting to get to the crux of this, and how Captain Miller and the rest of the team is, you know, kind of dealing with this, right? They're sending, you know, whatever it was, you know, these eight men out to find one man. So that's kind of a question that gets asked, I believe. I think maybe Private Mellish says, you know, how much is the life of one person worth? And, it, you know, Captain Miller says, well, according to the U.S. government, he's worth the eight of us. And that's kind of a recurring theme, right? As you lose, you know, one of your brothers here, brothers in arms, and Private Caparzo, here just going through trying to do the right thing, and, you know, kind of this horror of war. And that gets into kind of one of the more intimate scenes kind of in the middle section here of the film, is, you know, they are dealing with the aftermath, the loss of Private Caparzo, and they're spending the night in a church, I guess, somewhere close by this burned out town. And they're having a little bit more, you know, kind of personal talks. It's less jokey now. Things have taken a more serious turn as they realize, you know, kind of what these stakes are and what they're really being asked to do, as they're kind of processing that. And you get kind of a really neat scene. Private Jackson there, played by Barry Pepper, as he's talking about, you know, how he'd pretend to be asleep. And when his mom would come home from work late at night, then, you know, she just wanted to talk to him. And why would he do that? And, you know, those are the little things that you do kind of in life that you don't think of until you're really kind of faced up, you know, against something like this where you could potentially lose your life. But I really like kind of the scene. We're learning a little bit more about Captain Miller here in this section. And yeah, the stakes are getting pretty high, but you know, the mission still comes first. So we are headed off to the next, right? We're just going basically from airborne team to airborne team until we can find Private Ryan. And luckily we think we found him. Maybe.
Yeah, it's almost too easy. We're only like an hour and a half in, and I should have known. But the first time I saw this, I was like, oh my gosh, okay, all right. And Nathan Fillion, of all people, is comes out of, you know, this long line of soldiers. And they're like, are you, you know, James F. Ryan? And he says, yes. And then, you know, Tom Hanks's character sits him down and says, look, I've got something to tell you, and I don't know how to do it. And he's really... this character, this Captain Miller, is just really special because he's a soldier and he's very smart. You can tell at no, you can tell, but he's also very patient. I mean, there's the Private Davies, I think, who was the translator. He has just, he's a complete novice to all of this stuff. He barely knows how to shoot a weapon. He doesn't know what he's doing. And Tom Hanks's character of Captain Miller is really calm. So he uses that when he's trying to tell this Private Ryan that his brothers are dead. And of course, Private Ryan starts to cry. And then he's like, how did they die? And that's when you know something's kind of wrong, because of course, Captain Miller says, well, they died in combat. And Private Ryan says, well, that can't be true. They're in grade school. And then you realize that this is not the right Private Ryan at all. Yeah. And they're like, are you from Iowa? And he's like, no, I'm from Minnesota. And it's like, oh my gosh. And you can see Captain Miller's the acting here is so great, because he kind of rolls his eyes and he's like, all right, well, okay, well, yeah, sorry to bother you. And he's like, wait, am I going home? I mean, because they told him, because your brothers are dead, you have to go home.
Are you sure my brothers are okay? Yeah, I'm sure they're fine.
He's like, I'm sure they're fine. It's fine. Sorry about that. And so it's really very telling, because Captain Miller is really kind of the pulse and he's so calm, even in the wake of all of this horrific tragedy around him. He really keeps it together. But it's taking a toll. You can see throughout this part, by this point, you see that one of his hands is really shaking and he doesn't really understand why. He talks about in that church scene you were talking about, he kind of talks to one of the other captains, I think played by Ted Danson, actually. Everybody's in this film. And he's saying, you know, you tell yourself that, you know, when someone dies under you, it's because we saved so many others. And he's like, that's how I have to think about it, or else I'll just completely go crazy, because he's lost so many people and it had nothing to do with him. But of course, he bears that responsibility. And he does it with such grace for almost all of this film. It's truly astounding. And it's probably one of the reasons why they get as far as they get as a team, because he, when they are fighting about, hey, I think this is stupid, why are we all putting our lives on the line to go save this one guy, you know, and he's trying to explain to the team that, hey, there's a mother out there that's going to be told three of her four sons are dead. Like, that's why we're doing it. And they're like, well, you know, I don't care. Ed Burns's character, Private Reben, is like, I don't care, this is stupid. And they're not so nice about it. And it, rather than fight with them, he has this really calming way of dealing with them. But it's great, because at the end of this scene, you've got a sigh of relief, because you're like, well, I'm glad his brothers are okay. And they're like, well, this isn't it. But he kind of rolls his eyes. He's like, yeah, I'm sure the kids are fine. All right, we got to keep going, guys. Grab all your stuff. Grab your gear. Let's go to the next city.
That's right. Yeah. On to the next. You get a couple more kind of really impactful scenes through here as they're moving their way from airborne company to airborne company. There's a scene where they get up to the next commander and kind of gives them, you know, a bag full of dog tags that they're kind of sifting through. They're making a little light of it, you know. You know, these soldiers are kind of at their wit's end looking for Ryan now at this point. They're going through and kind of this other airborne team who look to be a little worse for wear are marching back and they're seeing them. And, you know, which obviously, you know, is going to sort of send a bad signal to your fellow combatants there as you're kind of making light of the people that they lost, you know, as you're on your dogged pursuit of saving Private Ryan. But the good news is that does lead us to a tip of where Private Ryan actually is, the real Private Ryan, the one that we're actually looking for. He is in Rommel. He stayed behind to help defend a bridge. That's where he is, and that is where we are going. But we have one more sort of tumultuous task for Captain Miller and company is on their way to Rommel. They come across a German bunker. And Captain Miller decides that they need to take that out. His reasoning is that, you know, you don't want the next, you know, team squad of guys behind you coming up to run into this bunker. So we're going to take it out. And why are we going to take it out? Because winning the war is our job, says Captain Miller. But, you know, taking this bunker is not without its casualties either, as our favorite medic, Wade, loses his life in pursuit of turning over this bunker.
Yeah, and it's really... None of this is easy. It's one of the hardest movies to watch. For this reason, it's not the gore of it. Because he dies pretty gruesomely, and painfully over a course of a few minutes. It doesn't happen instantly. But the thing about this film, I think that why we're talking about it so long after it's been made, is that it really had this great balance of showing you the absolute horror of what people went through and doing it in a way that was not gratuitously violent. We've all seen very violent films that went way over the top, and it really detracted from this. And I thought that this scene did a really good job of showing how this band of brothers really came together. Wade was the medic, and so they don't really know what to do. And so they're trying to put pressure on the wounds. They're, you know, checking to see, because he's been shot, so they're checking to see where the bullets are. He's trying to talk him through it. He's not really able to talk. And then at the end, they just ask, you know, tell us what to do. And he says, well, I could really use some morphine. And so they give him all the morphine they can, so at least he is not in agony. And they just kind of hold him, and it's really hard. It's really hard. Mm-hmm. I'm all teary talking about it. Sorry.
Yeah, it's a tough one for sure. And you mentioned it's not gratuitous violence and gore. It's very justified kind of violence and gore in what you're seeing, because it certainly is very violent. It's, you know, very, very gory, but it's within the confines and context of what, you know, World War II and these battles were. So it, you know, it feels very real. It feels very personal as you're watching it and you're seeing Wade being taken care of there. And, you know, they do capture one of the German soldiers from this who, you know, they make dig the grave for Wade. But, you know, Captain Miller makes the decision to let this guy go. He says he's a prisoner of war. We're sending him off to the next unit, and they let him go on his way as they're still in pursuit of Private Ryan. And that is where they get. They get to Rommel. They meet Private Ryan there, tell him that his brothers have died. And he responds in the way that I think a lot of soldiers probably would have, right? Like, I, you know, my brothers died, which is sad. And you get some really great stuff with Matt Damon kind of processing that information later as he's telling a story about him, and just this really great scene. But, you know, he says, why do I get to go home? You know, everyone else here has fought and been hurt and are dying and seeing all of the horrors of war, the same as me. Why am I more deserving of that just because my brothers died? And, you know, Captain Miller's kind of had his fill of this at this point, right? He's like, I don't care. If you don't want to go, you're going anyway. We've lost two of our guys. We've been searching for you for, you know, who knows how long at this point. And they get there, but they do decide finally to kind of stay there. They're going to help protect this bridge until some reinforcements can get there. And we get kind of one last little battle standoff as the Germans and the tanks are getting ready to roll through town towards this bridge here in kind of the final head of our war story following Captain Miller around.
Yeah. And it's interesting because they're trying to protect this bridge. This is the one time when Captain Miller does kind of lose it. And it's heartbreaking because he's kept it together for so long. It's been really hard because he feels, again, it was his decision to try and take out this bunker. It was his decision. And now they've lost people. And Private Ryan is not unappreciative of that. I love how the first thing he asks when they, you know, because the other team members are like, dude, you're coming with us. We've, you know, two people have died looking for you. Like, this isn't cool. And the first thing he does is ask their names. And it's played so beautifully, kind of the exchanges between Matt Damon and Tom Hanks in this. And the fact that there has been a pool, there's been a betting pool going around because Captain Miller doesn't talk about who he was before the war. He doesn't talk about his life. He doesn't talk about his job. So it's this big mystery. And while the team is fighting over, you know, with Ryan about, hey, you're coming with us. This isn't cool. This isn't fair. You know, we've come all this way. He finally lets everybody know who he is. And what his role was. You know, he was a school teacher, and probably because he was a school teacher, he read the manual. And so he's got all of these kind of ideas tucked away about these bombs that they can use, that they can make with kind of household goods that they have on their person, and ways that they can help defend this bridge. And so, you know, if you can't beat him, join him. You know, Private Ryan has been, he said, I'm not going anywhere. And you can tell my mom if, you know, if I die, that was the choice I made. And I did with the only brothers that I have left. And those are the people that are here. And so the whole team kind of rallies and says, okay, we're going to help defend this bridge. And that ensues like the last big battle of the film. And you see basically the death of almost every single person that came to mm-hmm. save Private Ryan. You know, and we don't have to go and talk about all the various ways they all die. It's really well done, I will say. I mean, I was never a war film lover because I just thought it was really hard. It's very hard for me to watch. Mm-hmm. And I'm really privileged because I get to watch it, and I've never gone to war. So now I make myself, but the scenes are so beautifully, like the set design is amazing, the special effects that they do, or the effects, I don't want to say special effects because none of this is CGI, I don't believe, the way that they engineer like the buildings falling down and the explosions and the tanks that come through and all of that is really just sweeping and had to have been painstakingly handled in order to achieve the effect. And
Yeah, so we get kind of this final head, as I mentioned. You got the German soldiers and tanks are coming into town, and they're trying their best to kind of stave off this attack to defend this kind of last bridge. I think they say that there's only like two bridges left, like in all of France, basically, or, you know, right, at least over this river, whichever, you know, wherever that is. My geography's failing me a little bit here. But yeah, you have kind of this penultimate sort of battle that's, you know, in, obviously, in a war sense, you know, it's the American soldiers versus the German soldiers. But on a more personal sense, it's, you know, Captain Miller and his squad are protecting and fulfilling their mission of getting Private Ryan out of there. And it does cost some more lives, including Captain Miller, who is the last man kind of standing on this bridge before they ultimately have to blow the bridge up to not allow the German forces to overtake it there. You get a really kind of heartbreaking scene as he's just kind of firing this pistol at this tank, you know, as he's grasping onto life. And then, you know, finally some Allied forces swoop in with some planes and blow up the tank there. And you get one kind of last exchange there between Ryan and Captain Miller, where, you know, Captain Miller kind of takes his hand and tells him to earn this. Yeah, because basically his life was worth six, I believe, were the was the final tally there on with Captain Miller and the rest of his team. And then it kind of transitions back to the Normandy cemetery, and we see the gentleman standing there who we now see is looking at the grave marker of Captain Miller. And the old man there is Captain Ryan. So a little bit of a bait and switch there. Kind of when the movie starts, you're led to believe that that is Tom Hanks's character, Captain Miller, but no, it is not. It is Private Ryan there as an old man. And you get just this really wrenching thing as he, you know, kind of turns to his wife and they embrace, and he asks her basically to validate his life, right? A lot of people sacrificed so that he could be there, standing there on that day. And it's really very touching and emotional and beautiful. And you know, the story is kind of big in scope, but there's a lot of that, and it plays into a lot of you know, sort of survivor's guilt and the way that, you know, I like you, am very privileged as I've never been put into a situation like that, but I would imagine that a lot of people feel that way. You know, why me? You know, why am I different or more special? Or, you know, why didn't I wasn't asked to sacrifice as much as you know, these other men and women who are, you know, alongside of me.
That's right. Yeah, it really, for me, it's one of those things where this film does a great job of explaining the importance and the paradigm shift that can happen through movie watching. You know, I think as an American, you know, we learn about World War II, and we learn about the American part in World War II, and we learn about all of these things and how bad it was. And but we don't really learn about those things unless we take it upon ourselves to really get into those subjects, because it's really graphic and because it's some of these themes are very adult. And even in high school, you know, you wouldn't necessarily learn about all these things. And so this film, I think, is a service to folks who've never had, like you and me, who've never had to be in that situation, to appreciate even a very small, minute sense what it was like to be in this situation. And that's the reason why people take, you know, Memorial Day and Veterans Day and all of those, you know, those celebratory and somber days of remembrance and joy more seriously than others, is because of that knowledge. And again, you know, the way in which this film was done, I think it really paid honor to kind of the depravity of war, and the fact that, you know, as you were talking about that kind of dog tag scene, every dog tag was a person, was an entire universe who had parents and siblings and friends, and they're no longer on the earth anymore. And it's just, it's very daunting. And so I think that's probably one of the reasons why it was nominated for 11 Academy Awards.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So this was nominated for 11 Academy Awards, justly. You know, we'd mentioned it's, you know, one of the all-time great films, and, you know, yeah, potentially the greatest war film of them all. So 11 Academy Awards, it won 5, it lost 6. So let's see. So what did it win? It won Best Director for Steven Spielberg. So it was directed the best. It won best cinematography. So it was shot the best, looked the best. It won best sound and sound effects editing. So sounded the best. And it won film editing. So it was put together the best. But it didn't win them all, though. Like I said, it did lose best score. John Williams, Tom Hanks, nominated for best actor, lost that one. Lost set decoration. Okay. Lost makeup. Okay. There were a lot of wounds and things. A lot of really good makeup. And this one, Michaela. It lost original screenplay. Okay. Fair enough. But it lost best picture, Michaela, that year. There was another film out that year. It was called Shakespeare in Love. That was the one that won. It won best picture. I actually watched the presentation of that today, just before we started recording. Harrison Ford is the one giving out the nomination, and Shakespeare in love one. There's a lot of potential reasons why people think that is, and you can feel free to Google those and to read those and to do your own research. But I will say, just kind of in short, I mean, obviously the ones that it won, it was very worthy of winning. The makeup one is really mind-boggling to me, how it didn't win best makeup. And then obviously how it didn't win best picture, I think was a shock to everyone, except for maybe someone by the first name of Harvey that night. I don't know, but.
Right. Yeah, I remember watching the Oscars live when Shakespeare in Love won. Now, to be fair, I was like a 17-year-old girl, and I loved the movie Shakespeare in Love. And I was really happy that it got the accolades that it got, because I think Shakespeare in Love is great. As I've gotten a little bit older, even then I thought that it was a miss. But as I gotten a little bit older, I've gotten a lot more angry about it. And that's fine. But this film definitely has stood the test of time. It's one of, like you said, if not the best war film, that's touted the best war film of all time. It's definitely up in like the top five, because of all of the things that it did do really well. On top of which, the set decoration, I mean, how to set up all of that, and to have meadows and the beach itself, all of the war-torn cities and the different, just all of the different scenes to make up what looked very real to 1940s France is amazing. Mm-hmm. To me. To have it to not win some of these things is beyond me. So I think it is going to go down in history as one of the biggest misses and upsets of all time. And people, if you feel rightfully that's rightfully so, that's fine. You're wrong. That's okay. It's subjective, but you're wrong. And so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Shakespeare in Love, it's a good movie. And maybe any other year, I don't know. But Saving Private Ryan, to me, is kind of transcendental. It's one of those movies that, you know, kind of ticks off a mile marker in what cinema can be. And if you watch any sort of war movie or action movie or anything that's even a little bit actiony, I guarantee that it's doing something that Saving Private Ryan created in 1998. So moving on from the Academy Awards that night. So Michaela, this came out in 1998. We were in high school. I remember myself in high school. It was a field trip. We all went, had to get our letter signed from our parents that we could go with the history class to go and see Saving Private Ryan. World War II. Preservation was actually a really big deal to one of our history teachers in high school, and kind of collecting that. And, you know, it was something that was neat at the time. And even now, looking back on it, it's more so neat as, you know, the number of men and women who experienced this, you know, time is really dwindling. So these stories get, you know, more and more important to preserve and to teach people about, so we can, you know, avoid things like this in the future. But what about you, Michaela? Do you remember seeing this about the time that it came out? It was kind of a big deal. I don't know if you remember This was obviously, it was very, very triggering. We didn't even know that the word triggering, but it caused a lot of like PTSD for veterans and things who went to see it. Remember there were special like hotlines set up for, former veterans to call in who had seen the movie and things like that. I remember, just from that standpoint too. But what about you? I don't want to get in your way there. Sorry.
Oh, no. So I did see this. I waited until it was out. It was out in the summertime. It came out and I was able to get the box, VHS tapes, because I think that's what we had still back then. Maybe not. Maybe we were in DVD land. But I remember it was summertime because I went to France that summer. And that was when I saw the beach. And that is when I went to the memorial cemetery there. And I remember, even though it was long distance and I thought I'd get in trouble with my dad, I called my grandpa, who was on one of the destroyers on D-Day. And I told him that I'd been there. I didn't tell him I'd seen the movie because I didn't know how he would take that. He wasn't really a big movie person and I didn't want him to think that we were making light of it or anything. But I remember he asked me if the beaches looked pretty and I said they did. And he said, well, I'm glad they do today because they weren't pretty the day that I was there. And I never really asked him about anything else. He never talked about it. And it was my dad actually that told me I should go and, as 17, I was like, Eiffel Tower, woohoo. And my dad was like, you should really make sure you go do this because your grandpa was there and he was like one of two people on his boat that survived. And I had no idea. So I think you're right though. I mean, it's so important. This is a film I can't wait to show my son. Obviously he's too young to see it now. But I can't wait to show him because, we have a lot of opportunity to never have to fight like that again. If we can learn from the mistakes that we have made as a society and the choices that we've made. And so, I'm really very grateful that this film was made. And I think it did a really good job of being, entertaining is not the right word, but paradigm shifting and being impressionable. And also being respectful. There's a lot of badly done war films and we can talk all about them at some point, but I think that this really did just an amazing job. And so that I saw it then and I have not seen it since I watched it last night because it's so hard for me and I've become an emotional wreck. I can't even talk about it. Poor Brian's going to have to edit out like half of the stuff on this podcast. Sorry.
Yeah, there's something very special about it in that it doesn't glorify it in any way, but it also doesn't, really drag it through the mud either, in a way, so to speak, right? It doesn't take it. I don't even know how to phrase what I'm trying to say, but it doesn't. It's not glorifying, Captain Miller and his company, and it's not condemning them. It's just telling you this is what it was, right? It's very putting it out there, so to speak. And then this kind of spurred on Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks to go on and kind of create and produce Band of Brothers, which was an HBO kind of series that lasted for 10 episodes. This little series of that, it did very well. It won a bunch of primetime Emmys. It's excellent. If you're interested in those kind of stories at all, so you definitely can search that out and check it out. And it's a really good movie. I don't know if we did it any sort of justice, but it was important to talk about, and especially now as we're kind of in Oscar season, and kind of the cultural and the Academy ramifications of what that was and what went down. And like I said, if you have any interest in that, I encourage you to go ahead and Google, 1999 Oscars, and you'll be up to your eyeballs and things to read about all the people's opinions on it. And now you have ours too. So with that in mind, Michaela, like I mentioned, Oscars, they're coming. We've got the nominees are out this week. We watched those, took a break from our vacation to check out the nominees. We're going to be doing some extra Academy Award bonus coverage over on our Patreon. We're going to be doing little mini episodes for the Movie of the Year contenders, probably some other stuff. So you're going to want to make sure you follow along on Patreon. It's a great way to support the podcast if you're interested. It's patreon.com/drinkthemovies. And next week on the main show, Michaela, we're going to be talking about another really good film, one I'm excited to check out again. I haven't seen it in quite a while. That is The Fugitive. So we've got a good cocktail coming for that one and a good movie. So we'll have a good conversation about that. So let us know at home if you've listened through this, if you make yourself up a Normandy flower, or what your thoughts are about Saving Private Ryan, and what your thoughts were about that that very tricky Academy Awards from 1999. We want to know all of that stuff. So you can take pictures and send us your thoughts and comments on our social media. It's at Drink the Movies on Twitter and Instagram and Hive. It's facebook.com/drinkthemovies. If you want to see pictures of our cocktails, you can do that at drinkthemovies.com. Keep an eye on that website, because we'll be having our Oscar giveaway, our Oscar prize package for, you pick them, you win a prize. We're got some good prizes in the works again this year. So keep an eye on that. And, the best way to make sure you're getting all the content that we're dropping is to get subscribed. Michaela, where can they do that?
You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Good Pods, anywhere where Anchor Podcasts are distributed. And we do 2 drops a week, and we are loving that. We're loving talking about movies and building the community, and y'all are doing that. We're just talking here. We're so knocked out that there's so many of you that love cocktails and movies and want to talk about it all. And so if you like what you're hearing, subscribe. If you really like what you're hearing, tell your friends. We want an entire world full of cocktail movie watching love.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. So with that in mind, Michaela, we've just talked about one of the greats, but I think we need to decompress just a little bit. We need to reflect on what we've seen and do some thinking, and we probably need to brush off our movie tickets, our streaming, our remotes, and get ready, because we're going to be buckling in for this year's Oscars. So hopefully we're not too far behind. We'll keep you all up to date on all of that stuff and talk to you next time on
Drink
the Movies.